Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Yes, everybody. You know the drill. We've started this podcast to help anyone who's remotely interested in trapping and neutering animals. We're the help we didn't receive when we first wanted to get involved, and we want to be universities in the TNR world. I'm Alex, one of your hosts for this ride, and I'm so grateful to have Adele by my side. Hey, Adele.
Hello, Alex. Where are you calling in from today?
Well, I just flew last night to Playa del Carmen, Mexico, and I am actually physically present with our beautiful guest today.
Hi.
Very cool. How is it so far?
It's hot, way warmer than Vancouver, but I do appreciate the sunshine, so definitely taking that in.
Very nice. That's exciting. Well, today we are with Laura, and Laura is in Playa del Carmen. Originally from Wales, she moved there to Playa del Carmen, Mexico when she was only 17, and she worked a lot of different jobs, but found her true passion when she met her cat, Coco. After the passing of Coco, she founded Coco's Animal Welfare back in 2009. Her organization focuses on TNR and offers low-cost or even free sterilization. And they also work on educating people and improving animal welfare. And from what I've read, you guys have helped an absolute ton of animals in many different ways. And I can't wait to hear more about that.
Hi, yeah. Welcome to the show, Laura. Thank you. Yay, we're so excited to have you here. So we usually start the conversation by asking, how did you get involved with animal rights?
So I grew up always rescuing animals with the help of my dad, and always had an interest for animal welfare. And then obviously moving to Mexico and seeing how many animals needed help here on a whole nother level, I really wanted to make a bigger difference and do something to change the way that things are for animals here in Mexico. I had my cat Coco, who unfortunately passed away, and I realized something bigger needed to be done. Started seeing so many cats outside on the street. I started initially just trapping the cats outside my house, starting, you know, very small as a volunteer, trapping cats, taking them into vet clinics and volunteering at other animal welfare organizations. And then I realized something bigger needed to be done and founded Coco's Animal Welfare. We started off really small. Initially, I went and asked all the local vets in Playa del Carmen if they could help by sterilizing two animals a week each clinic for free if I provided, you know, the supplies. And so it started off very, very small, just two animals in each clinic. So it was about 14 animals a week getting sterilized, and soon realized, you know, we needed to do more. And that was when I hired a first full-time vet and started our permanent sterilization clinic. And from then to now, we now have four full-time vets. So we've grown a lot.
Awesome.
Working full-time. We run a permanent spay neuter clinic. We do 20 surgeries a day. And on Tuesdays, we do up to 50 or 60 cats. So we have Cat Tuesdays, where we do a bigger number of animals. And we have another vet come in to help us that day, Dr. Karina, who comes in on Tuesdays, so we can do a higher number of sterilizations. And it's just grown from the beginning. We've had a lot of support. We've, you know, realized very quickly that we needed to focus on sterilization and not on becoming a shelter. If we'd have become a shelter, I think we would have helped a fraction of the animals that we've been able to help. And with funding going towards a solution being sterilization and education, I feel like we're able to make a bigger difference.
Definitely. And it sounds like you've gone right along the same journey that a lot of us have, where we see a need, we try to step in, and then we quickly realize the problem we're facing is way bigger than we realize, and that we have to. Even the fact that you started off with one vet, and now you have four, it shows like how we are always trying to scale up to address the needs of these issues. So that's really cool to hear. Do you want to start off by telling us a little bit about your connection to Mexico? You went there at quite a young age. How did you choose to go there, and what made you stay?
I originally came on holiday with my family. I was 17 years old, so I didn't have a plan to stay and live in Mexico my whole life. But I fell in love with the sun and with the culture and the people, and got a job on my last night on holiday. And it was supposed to be a 6-month thing, you know, 6 months, and then go back and continue studying and go back to Wales. And that turned into 20 something years. So I just fell in love with Mexico and everything about Mexico and couldn't imagine not being here anymore. And as time went on, you know, I started to make more contacts. Cocos began to grow bigger and bigger. And it wasn't anything that was planned. It just happened. And I'm so glad that I came to Mexico on holiday and that this was, you know, I can't imagine living in Wales right now. I love Wales, but the weather, I'm able to do so much more here to help the animals, and there's so much more needed to be done here. So I stayed.
Do you have an approximate number of how many sterilization you have achieved since you first started Cocos, which was 16 years ago?
16 years ago, yeah. We just celebrated our 16th anniversary, and we've done over 68,000 sterilizations for dogs and cats since we began 16 years ago.
68,000?
Yeah. So we started off, you know, obviously with the daily clinic, 20 animals a day and 50 cats on Tuesdays. But we also run a big clinic in November every year. It's a three-day clinic where we do 1,000 sterilizations in 3 days, which is the big event of the year. So that's one of the best weekend clinics where you get to help 1,000 animals in 3 days. We have over 120 volunteers, vets, vet techs helping us achieve this. And we set up the clinic in a school, in a local school, and are able to help 1,000 animals in 3 days, which is amazing. So yeah, we've managed to accomplish that in growing with the permanent clinic, you know, hiring one vet, then two, then three, then four, and also with the yearly 3 day clinics, we've been able to achieve 68,000 sterilizations.
I think these crazy numbers really show how much of a need there is for sterilization, because I was asking you last night, like, do you really have 20 people coming like to sterilize their animals a day? And you really do.
Yeah.
So it really, like, there's a big need.
There's a big need. And I think Playa del Carmen is one of the fastest growing cities in the world. So with that growth, you know, the need for sterilization grows as well, because people keep moving here, adopting animals. We keep need to work on education. A lot of people still think that animals need to have one litter before sterilization. So we work a lot on that, on giving people the facts on it, the benefits of sterilization, the importance of sterilization, how cats do not need to have one litter before being sterilized, and pediatric spay and neuter. So we work hard on that. But with Playa del Carmen growing so fast, our job never ends.
Yep. Definitely. What's interesting, I think, is your area is on the water. Like, your land is bordered by the water. You're on the edge of the country, and still you have enough animals to need to do 1,000 in a few days. I mean, it's an absolute huge number. And there are a lot of organizations who that's their goal in a year, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is really interesting. I'd love to go a little bit deeper into the different things that you have set up in order to achieve that, whether that's to achieve that kind of capacity. Like you said, like, you need 120 volunteers, where they come from, and also maybe some standards you've needed to put in place, like around pediatrics, spay and neuter and stuff, so other people could potentially take some information from that and see what they could apply themselves.
Yeah, sure. So basically, most of the vets that come are Mexican. They come from different parts of Mexico, Cozumel, Cancun, sometimes Mexico City, further away. So the medical team is mainly Mexican. On occasion, we've had a couple of vets from the States come down, or from Canada. And then volunteers from everywhere, local, abroad, you know, anyone who wants to help. We have a few vet techs come down from Canada to help us, which is amazing, because they help loads. We always need, I think the main need is obviously medical, so vet techs and vets. And the local team who run the reception and the recovery are usually people from around Playa del Carmen, or people who spend half the year here and half the year abroad, but have more experience and do a lot of clinics and help a lot. So before the clinic starts, we have volunteer courses. So here at our permanent clinic, we offer a volunteer course so people can learn here before the big clinic how to work in recovery, learn our protocols, how to carry an animal properly from surgery to recovery, from recovery, you know, how to transport animals, how to prep animals, how to recover animals. So we do this before. We have a meeting as well with the reception team, make sure the reception team know what paperwork needs to be filled out, what forms need to be done. Because obviously, I really feel like the key to the successful clinic is reception. If reception goes wrong, the whole day falls apart. You need to label your animals and know you know, which animals are where and who's who. So we use tap bands. We use the paper collars. We use one color for females, one color for males. We use red tap bands for aggressive animals. So immediately we can, as well as say, so for example, white is a female, so they have a white band. If they're aggressive, they would have a red band as well as a white band, so that everybody knows all throughout the clinic that we have an aggressive animal and that we need to be careful. And then if we have, for example, an animal, a pediatric animal or a pregnant animal that would need surgery sooner rather than later and that can't be waiting all day for surgery, we put a yellow tap band on as well so that we know those surgeries need to be done earlier as soon as possible. So for example, a pediatric female aggressive cat would have a white band for being a female, a red band for being aggressive, and a yellow band because they need to have surgery ASAP. So we have a lot of protocols in place. We have a really good system. We have training. We have courses beforehand. We have a person in charge of each area. So there's always someone that knows, you know, someone in charge of dog recovery, someone in charge of cat recovery, someone in charge of reception, someone in charge of the vet techs in prep, and obviously a head surgeon who's in charge of the surgical room, and someone in charge of checkout. So there's always someone, a key person who has a lot of experience, who we know well, working in charge of each individual area. And we have every animal that comes in, once they've checked in, they have to have a medical exam to make sure they're fit for surgery. This is something that helps us prevent animals with distemper or parvovirus getting in and, you know, contaminating all the other animals. So they all get a medical exam by one of the vets and check that they're healthy enough for surgery. Pediatric patients have to be 8 weeks old. Dogs have to weigh at least 1 kilo and cats have to weigh at least 600 grams. So all these things we're checking in the morning, you know, first thing as the animals are coming in, and making sure that they're healthy enough for surgery so that we're not operating animals that, you know, are going to get other animals sick or that are not going to make the surgery. You know, they could die in the surgery if you're operating an animal with PAV or distemper, or severely anemic or severely emaciated. So we do check that the animals are well enough for surgery. And then, you know, once they've passed the medical exam, it's all go, go, go until we finish the amount of surgeries we have for that day.
Gosh, I mean, you have covered organization of every important section. And that really speaks to one of the reasons why you've been so successful to achieve that volume. And it sounds like you're not just going for high volume, you're also going for high quality. And that's a really important part. I think it cannot be understated how important that disease control and prevention is. Like you mentioned, checking for parvo and distemper and things that could, I mean, one infectious animal on the table, if it's not sterilized properly, I mean, you could contribute to wiping out a whole group of animals. And that could be really bad, not just obviously for the direct impacts to the animals, but also the faith in the community who are bringing their animals to you and the trust that they're putting in to you guys and your team. So yeah, that's all really awesome to hear that you're going through so many checks. What do you do to check for parvo, distemper, and some other things? Like, is there a checklist? Is there a snap test that you do?
We have a checklist. We can't do the snap test because obviously here in Mexico, the snap test would cost more than the sterilization itself. So we don't do snap tests, but we do check, you know, for symptoms. We interview the people have they had diarrhea? Have they vomited? Are they sick? Do they have any symptoms? They have swollen glands? Are they healthy? Do they look healthy? It wouldn't be possible to do snap tests on everyone because it would time and finances, it would cost double the amount of money to do the clinic. But we do obviously as much as we can to secure that they're not sick. You know, are they eating okay? Have they had vomit, diarrhea, any blood in their poo? A full medical examination, checking, you know, their gums to make sure they're not anemic, making sure their heart's okay, checking if they're not emaciated, their weight, and making sure they're, you know, as healthy as possible. What I would say is one of the most important things for me in these clinics, whether it be the permanent clinic or the big sterilization clinic, is, as you mentioned, it's not about quantity. It's about quality and doing things how they should be done. We don't cut any corners, even if it's free. That's really important to me because I think if you can't do it properly, you shouldn't do it at all. And if if it costs more to do it properly, then you need to do less animals. So every animal must get the care that they deserve to have. They need to get the pain medicines, the antibiotics, the full protocol. We have cleaning protocols as well to make sure that between patients and in transporting patients, if by any chance there was anything that had been missed, because there are no guarantees. Either way, we're keeping the patients separate and not, you know, mixing them up and disinfecting surfaces and things like that to keep everything as clean as possible. We have really strict cleaning protocols. We have a protocol for everything in COCOs.
Good.
And a lot of people think, oh, it's free, so you must be like not using absorbable sutures or not using pain meds or not using anesthesia machines or a number of things that, in my opinion, have to be done. And we wouldn't be doing things properly at all if we were cutting any corners. So we don't cut any corners. We do things as if it was a private clinic and as if people were paying hundreds of dollars to get their animals sterilized, but we do it for free or low cost without cutting any corners.
I love that, because I think you're treating every animal as an individual rather than numbers. And I think sometimes we see that in rescues or even in like TNR program where animals are treated as numbers instead of individuals. So I really appreciate the fact that you
It's so easy to get carried away. And I've seen it happen with like, we got to break a record or, you know, we want to help so many animals. Let's just go, go, go. But like the reason we started off with one vet and then when we had enough funding and sponsorship to hire the second vet, we didn't hire the vet and then worry about how we were going to pay the salary, you know, things like that. We always want to have things in order and know that we're able to do them successfully before starting a project. So we always had the vet salary sponsored before we hired the vet. Made sure that we had everything we needed before we started doing high numbers and making sure that everything was in place before, you know, these big projects. And it's not about record breaking. It's about safely, securely, with the protocols and everything the animals deserve to have, doing as much as we can with that, not doing more than we can do properly.
I do have a question, though, because sometimes, so we were talking on our first episode about TNR versus TNVR, where people ask the vaccine when we spay.
Yeah.
Do you vaccinate them as well or not?
Yes. So the TNR cats all get rabies vaccines. They get internal and external deworming meds, and they all get rabies vaccines. Yes. So we also, on the feral, we do dogs and cats. So we have dog traps as well. We have our dog trapping program isn't as big as our TNR for cat program, but we do have two dog traps, and all dogs or cats that come in that are, you know, going to be put back on the street, get their rabies vaccines and deworming meds and flea and tick treatment. So that's for all around for TNR. We also on the, all animals get a tattoo, whether they're TNR or not, people's pets or rescues, all animals get a tattoo on their, like by their incision wound.
Oh, it's on the belly.
Because we do quick spay and it's a hook technique and it's a very, very small incision. So if you're operating pediatric patients, they won't even have a scar when they're older. So you can't tell whether they've been sterilized or not by shaving the stomach and seeing if they have a scar, because there won't be a scar. So we use the tattoo, just a little cross by the incision mark, so that we, in the future, if someone brought that cat in again or dog in again, we would know it had been sterilized. Now for the TNR cats, the cats that you can't, like, you know, pick up and give them a cuddle and see if they've got a green tattoo on their tummy, we use the ear mark. The left ear is marked, which is internationally used and approved for, you know, TNR. It's not cruel. We get a lot of people saying you're mutilating cats' ears. We get a lot of this, and we, you know, we find the need to educate people, inform them it's done under anesthesia. It's the very, very tip of the ear. It's not cruel. It doesn't hurt them. It often doesn't even bleed. And you know, we have quick stop, and they're under anesthesia while the ear is marked. But it's so much more beneficial, because for the people who are not marking ears, and we have a lot of this happening, there's a lot of animals coming in that people have brought in end up under anesthesia and end up in surgery even, and they've already been spayed. So, you know, it's a lot worse for the cat to end up being back on the operating table having surgery when they could have just marked the ear or given them a tattoo. So yeah
absolutely. And that's something, as you say, is really important to incorporate, is not just having a standardized way of indicating an animal from afar if they have been spayed or neutered or not, but also vaccinated, right? Because if you are doing vaccines, we have an obligation to make sure we're not doing too many in too close proximity, because that could have adverse reactions as well. But the tattoo is a really interesting idea as well for a lot of people who come in and say, as you said, well, this cat is in my house. They don't need the ear tip. I don't want to mutilate them or whatever. Or maybe they're going to be adopted. Well, at least we have a backup, which is the tattoo, to show that they've definitely already had that intervention.
I've never seen that, though. I've never seen a tattoo on the belly. I've seen the tattoo in the ear.
But yeah, it works really well. It's really successful. Just yesterday, we had a cat come in that we weren't sure if she was sterilized or not. This cat's, you know, was super friendly, and we just picked her up and blew a little bit on her stomach, and they're like parted ways, and you can see the little green cross. So it definitely works, and it's definitely successful. Here, a lot of people say, oh yeah, of course, we're going to leave our cats inside and never going to go outside again. It's like 90% of the time those cats are going to end up back outside, even if they're someone's pet. So it's, we find it really important if they're not fond of the earmark, the tattoo, and TNR cats get the earmark and the tattoo. So
Cool. For the pediatric sterilizations, the age that you are doing it, I mean, this is internationally recognized as the appropriate age. We've seen this from lots of different types of medical research, and it's accepted in the US, it's accepted in the UK, but a lot of different regions in the global south, especially, we've seen it a lot here in Greece. A lot of people don't even want to do it before a year. The most, let's say, advanced organization here won't do cats younger than 4 months or 2 kilos. So how did you introduce that education around what is safe and make sure that all of your vets and your volunteers were following that practice and trained in that practice?
COCOS has been really lucky to have guidance from IFAO, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, from very early on. And I think that has helped us a lot in writing our protocols and in having support from IFAO. And then our medical director, Dr. Janice, she's fantastic. She implements our protocols. So before vets are even hired, they have to read our protocols. They have to know what we're all about. And having IFAO support, Dr. Erica, who's on the ground here in Playa del Carmen, who works for IFAO, she has helped us from the get-go with our protocols. And then Dr. Janice, who works as our medical director, and Erica work together and have helped us implement the protocols. And they're respected by the whole team. We do have some issues with local vets who think that we're, you know, cruel and crazy for operating animals so young, and who, you know, tell people they shouldn't have surgery before their first heat. And, you know, there are a lot of, that's frustrating for us, because obviously we know that's not true. We've had a lot of support and guidance from international organizations, and our protocols have been approved by IFAO, which has been, you know, really great for COCOS, having Dr. Erica here in Playa del Carmen, and then Dr. Janice, you know, who's here to implement them. When we interview a vet, you know, the medical director obviously takes part in the interview process. So we make sure from the get-go that people are on board with quick spay and early spay and neuter, and that they're on board with that before they even start working at COCOS. And obviously it's educating people, you know, people who aren't on board, we always try and, you know, send them the the articles and all the information there is about how beneficial it is and how much you can prevent from doing early age spay and neuter, not just unwanted litters of kittens and puppies, but we get a lot of pyometra. Just yesterday, we had a pit bull come in with pyometra, like an infected womb, and it's an urgent surgery. And the local vet clinic wanted to charge a crazy amount of money. And it was actually a police officer that came in asking for help, because she didn't have enough money to pay for the surgery in this private clinic that had diagnosed the condition. And, you know, the dog had urgent surgery yesterday here in COCOS. So people then realize, oh, you know, I should have done this sooner. I should have got her, if I'd have got her spayed when she was a puppy, this wouldn't have happened, you know? So there's a lot of health benefits, as well as reducing the risk of certain types of cancer. And of course, you know, the biggest problem, which is the overpopulation of dogs and cats on the streets here in Playa del Carmen. I think the statistics in Mexico are 9 of every 10 puppies or kittens that are given up for adoption, only one of those will continue on in like the perfect home. Statistically speaking, 9 of those will end up on the street dead, run over in a terrible place.
Wow.
So when you know those statistics, it's frustrating when you hear local vets saying, oh no, wait until the first heat. Most people, after the first heat, their animals are pregnant, and then people don't want to sterilize their animals because they're pregnant and they feel like it's cruel. So we do deal with a lot of this, and we try and, you know, educate the people as much as possible and give them the facts, you know, the scientific facts. I think that's the best way to convince people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's such good context. And there are quite a few resources on early age spay and neuter, which we can put in show notes, like different kinds of databases and even like videos you can watch and research. One of the things I've seen is that younger cats recover faster, especially if you give them appropriate pain relief, which, you know, is obviously like weight dependent. Getting the dose right is really important when they're smaller size for the different analgesics we use. But yeah, they can bounce back faster. They can potentially have less pain if it's managed properly. So there's a lot of benefits, just like you outlined.
Yeah, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a few minutes to pick Laura's brain, talking about fundraising.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Laura from Coco's Animal Welfare. So, Laura, thank you so much for sharing everything you're sharing. We're really, really impressed. But one thing that stands out is that you managed to fundraise money to even pay 4 vets full time. And you have done 68,000 sterilizations. So that's a huge number. How do you fundraise? Where do you get the money? And any tips for other people? How can they get the money to start their own TNR program, maybe?
So I think one of the biggest tips I can give to start with is, you know, don't start anything until you have a complete, you know, plan in place with funding and, you know, you've got the funding and then you go from there. I think that's why we've been so successful, because before hiring our first vet, we made sure that we could have the salary sponsored and then wouldn't have the stress of how are we going to pay this vet salary, you know? So first of all, the first vet, I started off asking multiple donors to each donate what they could a month. And until I had the full commitment, you know, $100 a month here, $100 a month there, monthly donors, maybe someone donated $500 a month. And that was, wow, okay, amazing. Until we got the full amount sponsored, we hired a vet. So we got different donors to specifically sponsor a salary. And that was, you know, how we started. And then for the other vets, I ended up having a major donor, sponsor quite a few salaries. And we got really, really lucky with that. One specific donor who supports Coco's so much. He's a huge part of our organization. And so we were lucky enough to be able to continue getting sponsors for salaries and have more vets work for Coco's. Fundraising, aside from major donors, obviously there's grants to build the Coco's clinic. We were lucky enough to have a friend of mine. She unfortunately passed away a few years ago. Her dream was to have a cat sanctuary originally. She offered me a piece of land many years before the clinic was built to have a cat sanctuary. And I actually turned it down and I said, I'm really sorry. I don't want a cat sanctuary because I don't feel like that would make a big enough difference. And I don't want all of the donations to go on cat food and on keeping 20 cats on a piece of land. And then they fight and there's diseases and cats don't often get along well with each other anyway. So it can become, you know, quite complicated having a bunch of cats on a piece of land. So I actually rejected the donation of the land until a few years later. I had the support of IFAO and obviously Coco's had grown. I felt ready to, you know, do something bigger. And so I wrote a proposal to her about a permanent spay neuter clinic on her land. So this woman, she's amazing. She had gone, you know, from wanting a cat sanctuary, and she totally got on board with the proposal I wrote on turning her land into a spay and neuter clinic to make a bigger difference than this cat sanctuary, which was originally her dream. And so she just said yes really quickly. I wrote the proposal, sent it to her. I don't think even a few hours passed by until she said, yes, you can have the land for this clinic. And that was when we built the spay and neuter, the big spay. We were working in a small house before that with the one vet doing, you know, sterilizations. But that was when the big Coco's clinic was born from this donation of land from a friend of mine. And after that, we got a grant from IFAO and from Dogs Trust International to build the clinic. So obviously, we've had a lot of help from international grants and from individual donors. And then to keep clinic going, ongoing, we've had a lot of success doing online auctions, which is, I think, our biggest fundraiser. We've done raffles and scavenger hunts, all kinds of smaller events. But our big event, we do two every year. We do a spring auction and we do a Christmas auction. Our spring auction is going live tomorrow. Okay, oh, yeah. So we do these online auctions and we, because we're in like a very touristic destination, we ask local restaurants, businesses, tours to donate an item for the auction. So we write to people, go around visiting people, ask everyone and anyone we know if they can donate, 500 pesos in a bar, in a restaurant, a massage, a tour to swim with the whale sharks, hotel stays, all kinds of different things. And then we put them on an online auction and people bid on them. And that is how we, you know, get a good portion of our funding from the online auction.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The community comes together.
Community comes together for Cocos and it works really well. And we also, I think we're about to talk about this in a minute. So I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but we have a cat cafe program, which is an amazing project. And this ties in with the auction because we started the Cat Cafe program, which is basically this big all-inclusive resorts here full of cats. When I started Cocos, I would go to meetings where they would say, oh yeah, well, we shot 80 cats with a shotgun. And oh, well, we poisoned the popcorn and threw it all out. And yeah, those are the kind of conversations I was having 16 years ago. And I felt like something needed to change. So we started the Cat Cafe program, which is done in various parts of the world. You may have heard of it before, but basically Cocos, we go into a hotel, we trap all the cats, we bring them to Cocos, they get sterilized, vaccinated, dewormed, then they go back to the hotel. The hotel be build feeding stations for them and they feed them twice a day, away from the restaurants, but still close to where they're living. So it's a win-win situation. The guests that don't like cats don't have them in the restaurants anymore at the all-inclusive hotels because the cats are being fed. And the guests that do like cats can feed the cats in the feeding stations and know that the cats are healthy, sterilized, and also those same cats protect that territory and stop new cats from coming in. So it's win-win all around. It's stopping the vicious cycle of the hotel killing the cats and then new cats coming in because the territory is empty. And so it works really well. So I kind of tied the auction into this. You must be wondering what's the auction got to do with the Cat Cafe project? So these big all-inclusive hotels, in return for us going in and trapping all the cats and getting them sterilized, I asked them to donate all-inclusive stays twice a year for our auction.
Oh, wow.
So we get multiple donations, especially from the Rio Hotels and Resorts, who are really cat-friendly and they're a great resort, who donate 10 certificates twice a year for 4 nights for 2 adults each certificate. So we auction these off. And it doesn't just help fund the Cat Cafe project, it also helps fund other projects for Cocos.
I just have to say, when you said Cat Cafe, I did not know that was where it was going to go.
Yeah, what a big Cat Cafe. You drink a cup of coffee with each cat. It's called Cat Cafe because they build these little kind of, well, they're called cat cafes. They're little huts, basically, where they feed the cats twice a day. So it is a cat cafe, but just for cats.
I love that. And it's such a better image for the resort or the hotel because,
yeah,
I mean, Greece, for example, there's so many cats, so many resorts and hotels, and people are always complaining about the state of the cat, or that cat is so sick, that cat is pregnant, there's so many kittens, and they leave reviews on the hotels being like, you know, this is so sad, like you should do something. So
yeah,
I'm really glad you could work with them.
Yeah, it works out really well. And often when we get new hotels on board, it's because of guests who come here and talk to the managers about the state of the cats or the fact that the cats are reproducing, and then they pressure the hotels to contact us. And that's how often we get to start in a hotel. So people who come down, see a hotel that needs help, start talking to the managers, and Cocos gets involved, and then we get to make a difference.
And I think that also shows, like, if you have a voice, use it. Like, if you're just going on holiday somewhere and you, for some reasons, you can't do spay and neuter, maybe talk to the people around you, talk to the local community, talk to your hotels, just talk to the people and say, raise your concern and say, like, you know, there's a program that exists. And just maybe try to do some,
I don't think these programs would exist without the guests who, you know, definitely make a big impact talking to managers and, you know, making a bit of noise about the state of the cats. And I think that's how we've had so much success with this project.
And talking about the guests and like just a tourist coming to Playa del Carmen in general and just maybe like foreigners who are not used to see stray dogs or stray cats. I know because we do it also in Greece, Adele and I, we receive so many messages a day being like, hey, can you help that kitten? Can you help that dog? you've put something into place that you told me about last night. I was very impressed with it. Can you tell me more?
So we have, aside from sterilization, obviously, we had a lot of people wanting to drop animals off all the time at Coco's. And I really did not want to become a shelter. Like, my mission is to never become a shelter. So I was trying to figure out how can we help these animals without becoming a shelter? Because it's really hard to just say no, you know, we can't take them, go away. So we figured out a way to say, yes, we can help you. We can't keep your animals, but we can help you with, you know, our low cost support program. So we offer a low cost support program for cats and dogs that are rescued. It involves free or low cost sterilization, low cost vaccines, medical care support. We give out free kitten milk if you find a little litter of kittens. We ask people who come down from the States and Canada to bring like AMR kitten milk and powder and little bottles. And then we give it out to people when they find a litter of newborn babies without a mum. We show them. So they come into Coco's. They have like a lesson on how to care for these newborn babies with our vets who show them how to bottle feed them, how to take care of them properly. We have a little flyer on everything like that a kitten, newborn kitten needs. Because a lot of people don't know after you feed them, you need to clean them. They need to go to, you know, you need to stimulate them so they can pee and poo. And so we give them a lesson on all of this and do it with them. And then we send them away with the milk and the bottle, and they come back every few days for more milk and to check on how the kitten's doing. And they know they can contact us at any time for support. So we started this program. We have these flyers that say, like, thank you for being a hero. So when people rescue an animal, we say, like, wow, amazing. Thank you so much for being a hero. We can help you take responsibility for your rescue. You know, you take responsibility. You're going to look after the animal. You're going to find the animal a home. We're going to help you with our medical support program, with our advice, with our flyers, with whatever we can help you with, but you need to take responsibility for your rescue. And that's how we're able to help so many animals without becoming a shelter, because we put the responsibility back onto the rescuer. It's so easy to pick up an animal and just drop it off.
And you feel like you're a hero when really
you're not. Yeah. So if you're going to rescue an animal, take responsibility for your rescue. We'll support you and help you with the whole process. And also, you know, obviously I've been doing Coco's for 16 years. Everyone I know has like an animal, two animals, three animals. We're like, nobody I know now wants to adopt another animal. Every person that comes into Coco's has a whole set of new contacts, friends and family who they could, you know, try and give these animals up for adoption to. So we try and encourage people to promote their rescues themselves and find them homes.
Yeah. And especially like if you're a foreigner as well, even when like you go on holiday to Greece or something, there is options to travel back with the animal.
Yeah, for border adoptions.
Exactly. Yeah. And we can like, I'm sure Coco's can help with that as well. Like
definitely.
Maybe foster the animal for 2 weeks before you're ready. We also do that. And I think that's something people forget because they're just on holiday. And they're like, yeah, I'm just going to rescue that animal, drop it up in a shelter and then bye forever.
Yeah.
It's like, no, maybe you should help more than that.
Yeah, we encourage people if they, you know, if they want to rescue it, either to do TNR, you know, depending on the cat, a shelter's not going to work. You need to TNR the cat. If it's a friendly cat or kitten that you want to rescue and you've come on holiday, then we encourage you to, again, cross-border adoptions. If you can't adopt it yourself, find someone at home that can. And the same with local rescue here. Anyone who picks up an animal, we try and encourage them to, you know, take care of it themselves, and we'll support them.
Gosh, I mean, it's so much work, and you're really working strategically in order to have the support of the community playing their part and like tourists to play their part, in addition to what you're already doing to make sure you're not responsible for everything because you're already doing so much. And it seems like by doing that, by collecting all of these resources and opportunities, you've been able to maximize your output. That's one thing that I think we talk a lot about in international animal rescue protection spaces, is this frustration at this tendency to act out of emotion, or, you know, we're coming there and we're kind of acting like a savior of this animal looks sick, or they've, you know, been abandoned. I'm going to take them in, but I'm going to dump them on somebody else because I've done my part, or I'm just going to take the photo and send it to somebody else and they're going to have the lifelong cost and responsibility of the animal. But actually, there are more sustainable options we can take. And that includes not becoming a shelter, like you've just described. I mean, you've had this huge impact in your community. You've gone there and built up the infrastructure of the community by thinking smarter, more strategically, and not just on your emotions. Obviously, it comes from a place of emotion and empathy, but we're not just having knee-jerk reactions. We're thinking and we're planning ahead. And I really love how well you've illustrated that. It's obviously really impactful.
And it's very inspiring. I'm very inspired.
Yeah. I would say, like, I think I also saw early on, I think shelter burnout is so, like, common for people to burn out. You know, when you're working in shelter, medicine, shelters, animal rescue. And I think if you try to do everything, you end up doing it for a very short period of time and then you burn out. And I've seen that happen. So, and another reason for why, making sure you can do something before starting something, making sure you have the whole plan in place financially, as well as, you know, having your protocols, is because I think I do see a lot of burnout in the animal rescue world. And it's so easy to take on too much. And then you burn out and can't do anything at all. So I think one of the biggest tips I can give is take care of yourself and the people that, you know, you're working with and volunteering with, and, you know, making sure that you're looking after yourself and everyone around you, making sure that you've got a clear mission and vision, and that you're not doing too much so that you can continue ongoing to help the animals without burning out.
Yes, that's, I think it's an amazing note to end it on. Very inspirational.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you. But we are running out of time and need to wrap it up. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us on this adventure. And we're really excited about it. We're so excited for people to find out about your protocols and how you're doing an incredible job in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And we'd also love to hear about your experience, you who are listening to us. So send us a DM on either Saving Lives with 2 A's or Travel Animal Rescue on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok. See you all at our next episode. And in the meantime, stay out of trouble and keep trapping to save the streets one animal at a time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.